Welcome back. In the last episode, we spent our time on network security groups and application security groups, the tools that filter packets as they move inside your virtual network. Those filters are great at deciding what traffic is allowed, but today we tackle a different, sharper problem. It's not just about filtering traffic. It's about securing access itself. How do you log into a virtual machine from management without opening a door to the whole internet? And how does your application code reach Azure platform services like storage or SQL database without those services sitting out in the open? Those are the two exposure problems we solve today, and we'll do it with three services: Azure Bastion, Service Endpoints, and Private Endpoints. Let's set the scene. Once your workloads are running inside a virtual network, two access paths stay dangerously easy to get wrong. First, administrators still need to sign in to virtual machines. And the reflexive answer is to give the machine a public IP address and open port 3389 for RDP, or port 22 for SSH. That is exactly the surface that internet-wide port scanners hunt for, all day, every day. Second, your application code needs to reach Azure platform services, things like storage, SQL database, and Key Vault. By default, those services sit on public endpoints, reachable by anyone who has the key. So we have two gaps to close, and three services to close them with. Let's start with the first gap, management access, and the service that solves it, Azure Bastion. Here's the key idea. Azure Bastion is a fully managed platform service that gives you secure RDP and SSH connectivity to your virtual machines directly over TLS. You can connect from the Azure portal using an HTML5 web client right in your browser or through the native SSH or RDP client on your own machine. Bastion is deployed directly into your virtual network, and it serves all the machines in that network using their private IP addresses. Now, why does this matter so much? Because when you connect through Bastion, your virtual machines don't need a public IP address at all. No agent, no special client software. RDP and SSH ride over TLS on port 443, so you never expose port 3389 or port 22 to the internet. And because there's no public IP on the machine, it's protected from port scanning and other outside threats. Think of Bastion as a hardened jump box that Microsoft manages and patches for you. You get the entry point without owning the maintenance. Now, Bastion has one requirement you cannot skip, and it trips people up constantly. For every tier except the developer tier, Bastion needs a dedicated subnet, and that subnet must be named exactly, and I mean exactly, Azure Bastion Subnet. Here's a little memory hook I like. Think of the letters N, S, R. N is for name. The name is fixed. Any other name fails the deployment. S is for size. The subnet must be a /26 or larger. So a /26, a /25, a /24, and so on. For deployments made on or after November 2nd, 2021, that /26 is the enforced minimum. Older /27 subnets keep working, but you should grow them to a /26, so Bastion has room to scale out its hosts, and R is for resources. No other resources are allowed in that subnet. It has to be empty of everything else, and it has to live in the same virtual network and resource group as the Bastion host. So if a Bastion deploy ever fails on you, run through NSR first. Name, size, resources. A couple more setup details. Dedicated deployments, that's the basic, standard, and premium tiers, also need a standard SKU public IP with static allocation. Only the premium tier supports a private-only deployment, with no public IP at all. And the developer tier uses shared infrastructure, so it needs no dedicated subnet whatsoever. Let's talk about those four tiers, because they matter for exam questions and real decisions. Bastion comes in four SKUs: Developer, Basic, Standard, and Premium. Developer runs on a shared, free pool, connects one machine at a time, and is meant for dev and test in select regions. Basic gives you dedicated, fixed capacity, two instances, and browser-based RDP and SSH for production. Standard adds host scaling, plus the fun features: the native client, shareable links, IP-based connections, custom ports, and file transfer. And Premium gives you everything Standard has, plus session recording for compliance. So remember, native client, shareable links, and custom ports start at Standard. Session recording is Premium only. And by default, the connect ports are still 3389 for RDP and 22 for SSH. Custom ports are that Standard and Up feature. Deploying it is straightforward. From your virtual network or virtual machine, you choose Connect, then Bastion. The default settings option does a one-click deploy on the Standard tier. Or you configure manually and pick the tier, the availability zone, the instance count, the subnet, and the public IP. Either way, a dedicated deployment takes about 10 minutes, while developer comes up in seconds. And here's a nice cleanup step. After Bastion is running, you can safely dissociate and delete the public IP from your virtual machines because they simply don't need it anymore. Let me make this concrete. Imagine your team keeps one Windows virtual machine with a public IP and RDP open, used as a jump box into a subnet of 30 production machines. You want less attack surface and less patching. Should you keep that jump box or move to Bastion? Move to Bastion, clearly. That self-managed jump box still needs a public IP with port 3389 open. It's a port scanning magnet, and you have to patch and harden it yourself. Bastion is fully managed. There's no operating system for you to patch. It serves all 30 machines over their private IPs, and it carries RDP and SSH over TLS on 443, so nothing needs a public IP, not even the entry point. Then you dissociate the public IPs from your machines. That's the takeaway. Bastion trades a fragile, self-owned door for a managed, private one. Now let's move to the second gap, reaching platform services privately. And here we have two very different approaches. Let's start with service endpoints. A virtual network service endpoint gives you secure, direct connectivity to Azure services over an optimized route on the Azure backbone. You enable it per subnet, and you select the service's resource type, things like Microsoft.Storage, Microsoft.SQL, or Microsoft.Key Vault. When you do, two things change. First, the source IP switches to the private virtual network address. Traffic from machines in that subnet stops using a public IP as its source and starts using the private virtual network IP. That lets you add a virtual network rule on the platform resource to allow only your virtual network and remove public internet access. Second, routing becomes optimal. A more specific route is injected, with a next hop type called virtual network service endpoint, keeping that traffic on the backbone even when you force tunnel your internet traffic to on-premises. But here's the crucial part, and it's the thing to hold on to. The service keeps its public endpoint. With service endpoints, the DNS entries for the Azure service don't change. They still resolve to the service's public IP address. You are securing by virtual network identity, not moving the service into your network. Setup is a single selection on the subnet, there's no gateway or address translation required, and there's no extra charge. Two limits to remember. Service endpoints can't be used from on-premises, they only apply to traffic that originates inside the subnet. And for Azure SQL, the endpoint applies only within the service's own region. Now let's contrast that with the second approach, private link and private endpoints. Azure Private Link lets you reach Azure Platform Services over a private endpoint inside your virtual network, with traffic traveling entirely on the Microsoft backbone. Exposing the service to the public internet is no longer necessary at all. So what is a private endpoint? It's a network interface that uses a private IP address from your own virtual network, connecting you privately to a private link-powered service. In effect, you bring the service into your virtual network. A read-only network interface is created automatically and given a dynamic private IP from the subnet you choose, and that IP stays fixed for the life of the endpoint. The endpoint maps to a specific platform instance and a specific sub-resource. For storage, for example, that might be blob or file, and each one needs its own private endpoint. That specificity gives you strong protection against data leakage. Connections are one-directional too. Only the client initiates. The service provider can't reach back inward, and it's reachable from the same virtual network, from regionally or globally peered virtual networks, and from on-premises over VPN or ExpressRoute. The endpoint must be in the same region and subscription as your virtual network, but the platform resource itself can live in another region. Here's the part people forget: DNS. To reach the service over its private endpoint, the fully qualified domain name, the FQDN, must resolve to the private IP, but public DNS still points at the public endpoint. So you configure separate DNS settings, typically through a private DNS zone, the private link zones, which is exactly what Episode 7 is about. Get DNS wrong, and your clients silently keep hitting the public endpoint, and you'll swear the private endpoint is broken when it isn't. So let's make the core decision crystal clear, because this is the heart of the episode. Service endpoint versus private endpoint. Picture two scenarios. A service endpoint extends your virtual network's identity to a service that keeps its public endpoint. The FQDN still resolves to a public IP. It secures the whole service by a virtual network rule. It's free, it's one click on the subnet, and it does not work from on-premises. A private endpoint, by contrast, puts an actual private IP from your network in front of a specific resource and sub-resource. The FQDN resolves to that private IP through a private link zone. There's no public exposure needed. It works from on-premises and peered networks, and it's billed per data processed. Microsoft recommends private endpoints as the default for private access to platform services. Here's the rule of thumb to carry with you. If you only need to lock a platform resource to your virtual network, with minimal effort, and you have no on-premises requirement, a service endpoint is perfectly fine and free. But the moment you need on-premises reachability, or per-resource isolation, or a real private IP, or no public endpoint at all, you reach for a private endpoint. Let me test that with one scenario. Imagine an app tier of virtual machines that must reach a storage account privately. But you also need secure access from an on-premises office over ExpressRoute, and the FQDN must transparently resolve to a private address so no client needs reconfiguring. Which fits? A private endpoint, without question. A service endpoint won't work from on-premises, and the storage FQDN would still resolve to the public IP. The private endpoint places a private IP from your network in front of the account. It's reachable over ExpressRoute and peered networks. And with private DNS zone integration, the FQDN resolves to that private IP automatically. It also guards against data leakage because it maps to that specific storage resource, not the whole service. Let's do a quick recap before we wrap up. Azure Bastion gives you managed browser-based RDP and SSH over TLS on port 443, so your machines need no public IP, no agent, no client. Its subnet must be named exactly Azure Bastion subnet, sized A/26 or larger, and hold no other resources. Remember, NSR. Service endpoints keep the platform service on its public endpoint, but switch your source to the private virtual network IP and let you add a virtual network rule. They're free, per subnet, and DNS stays unchanged, but they don't work from on-premises. Private endpoints put a private IP from your network in front of a specific resource, keep traffic on the backbone, work from on-premises and peered networks, and they depend on private DNS to resolve correctly. And that last point is our bridge. A private endpoint only works when the FQDN resolves to that private IP, and that is precisely the job of Azure DNS. So in Episode 7, we'll dig into name resolution, Azure public and private DNS, zones, records, virtual network links, and those private link zones that make private endpoints resolve the way they should. I'll see you there.